The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 42. Kansas City, Missouri has more miles of boulevards than Paris and more fountains than any city except Rome. Welcome to your next tourist destination. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. Today we have a guest who is unique from many of the past guests we've had on in that much of the travel he does is actually business travel. And when he does travel for pleasure, it's usually with a family of five. That is quite different from the nomads and long-term travelers that we've had on the show in the past, which is why I'm super excited for Grant Baldwin, author and motivational speaker, to come on the show and talk about his experiences and a few things we haven't touched much on yet in these podcasts, such as how to keep business travel enjoyable, ways to cut costs when traveling for business but still retain your sanity, what it's like to travel with a family of five, including three daughters under the age of eight, and how he's able to afford family travel even though most people assume it's impossible. Grant's an incredibly talented storyteller. Duh, he's a motivational speaker for a living, and he provides tons of incredible advice for people who may be in similar situations. Before getting on to the interview, I just have one more announcement, and it's a biggie. Don't forget that the Paradise Pack sale is now live and will be available for only 72 hours until midnight on Thursday, June 5th. I've hand-selected 12 amazing resources that are designed to help you travel, live, and work from anywhere in the world. It's over $800 worth of products in the pack. We have some amazing contributors and absolutely awesome resources. So if you want to get yours, you just want more information, make sure to head over to theparadisepack.com immediately before the 72 hours is up. I wouldn't want anyone missing out on this chance. All right, let's get on to the interview. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is motivational speaker, author, and self-professed road warrior, Grant Baldwin of GrantBaldwin.com. Grant, thanks so much for coming on the show, and welcome.
Thanks, Trav. Appreciate you letting me hang out with you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And Grant, everyone who's come on the show to date have been people who generally travel a lot for pleasure, whether they're travel bloggers, adventurers, nomads, etc. Your situation's a little different in that you do a lot of traveling for your business. So can you explain to people what you do and what your schedule kind of typically looks like?
Yeah, great question. So basically, I'm kind of a motivational speaker for do a lot with high school and college students. Also speak a little bit to teachers and parents, speak at a lot of different high school conferences, conventions, a lot of colleges, freshman orientations, that type of stuff. So naturally, I end up traveling a lot to speak at a lot of these different types of venues. So yeah, I speak at about 50 or 60 events a year, literally just all over the country. It's typically somewhat seasonal, meaning like December, January is typically dead. It'll pick up in February, and then we'll have several events, February, March, April, May. Slows down a little bit in the summer, pick back up in the fall. And so we spend a lot of time just running around and mostly domestic stuff. But bounce around, seeing different pockets of the country. It's really fun.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Before getting into the whole travel part, I want to talk about the motivational speaker gig for a minute, because many people out there probably think that's a pretty sweet job. And I assume that you like it as well, since you've been doing it for quite a while now. How'd you get into it?
And despite what many people think, even though I'm a motivational speaker, I don't live in a van down by the river. So we just moved out. I'm pretty excited about that. I have always enjoyed working with students. I used to be a youth pastor, and always enjoyed working with teenagers and speaking. And so after I finished up as a youth pastor, spent about 9 months or so just trying to figure out what I want to do with my life, and met a couple guys who were speakers who were traveling around doing that deal. And I just kind of felt like, I think I could do that. I think I could give that a shot. And so started booking some stuff, started speaking at a few schools here and there, quickly just fell in love with it. I was like, dude, this is great. This is phenomenal. People are paying me to talk and hang out with teenagers. This is such a sweet gig. Yeah, really just kind of made a business of it. We've been doing this full time for about 6 or 7 years. And like I said, travel all over the country. And at this point, we've spoken to almost 500,000 students just all over the country. So it's super fun. I absolutely love it.
And if someone's interested in doing something similar, what are some things they should be aware of and how can they start? I mean, you said, you know, you thought, hey, I'm going to give it a go, but what are some logistics of starting? And then what are some things of they should think about before diving in of whether they're going to make it or whether they're going to like it or be good at it?
Yeah. Well, I think like a lot of things, there's some things that you may enjoy that you may like that may be fun in moderation, but the more you get into it, the more you're like, I don't know if this is for me. So the nice thing with speaking is you don't have to dive in and quit your day job on Friday and start speaking full time on Monday. It doesn't work like that. So taking the opportunity of any chance you get to speak, just to figure out, do I enjoy this? Do I like this? Does what I'm saying resonate with people? Does it work? Is it fun for me? And just trying to figure out if this is a natural fit. The big thing I would say is when people are getting started, to take advantage of any opportunity you can to speak. So whether that be at your company, at your business, if there's some type of meeting, if there's some type of trade show, if you can present a workshop at a conference you're going to attend, anything, any opportunity that you can to speak, the more you speak, A, the better you get, and B, the more comfortable you become. And then also the more people see you, the more likely people are going to be, if you're good, the more likely people would be to book you. Your best marketing as a speaker is just showing up and just killing it and just doing a great job. Because if you're at a conference, you do a workshop and you just crush it, it's a lot more likely that attendees are going to be like, that was really good. Can you come to my event? Can you come to my business? Can you come to my conference and present that? Those types of just little steps of just starting to get your name out there and starting to actually present and have people see you present is a huge step in the right direction.
And is that how most of the jobs you land come from, word of mouth, or people have seen you do it or have heard from someone who has seen you do it, like one level removed type stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly get a lot of business from that. And the longer you do it, the more people see you and the easier it is to get booked, for sure. We still do a lot of outbound marketing of just figuring out what are the conferences we want to speak at? What are the types of events we want to be at? Reaching out to some of them directly and just saying, hey, here's who we are. This is what we do. Here are similar events that we've worked with. So if you're looking for a speaker, we would love to be a part of it. Here's some things that we could talk about. Here's how we could help add value to your conference. So just some of those things, just to bring some credibility to the table and just trying to stay top of mind with people is a really big deal.
Yeah. And now let's flip it around a little bit for the business travel, because like I said, we haven't had anyone who's a real road warrior on the show yet. We've neglected that portion of the crowd. And a lot of people listening are people who travel a lot for business. So as someone who does travel a lot for business, what are some of the best tips for making business travel more enjoyable? Because I know a lot of people think, oh, I want to get a job that I travel a lot. And then they do it and then they kind of hit that business travel wall where, okay, this isn't really enjoyable. It's more of a nuisance. So how are you able to keep it enjoyable and fun as you're doing it?
Well, I think that's so true that, you know, the first time you get on a plane, you're like, this is awesome. This is the coolest thing. And the more you do it, you're like, ah, crap, I got to get on another plane. And so it loses its appeal real quick. A couple things that I do that I think hopefully help is that I try to remember why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that I know that every time I'm going to speak to students, that whether it be a high school student or a college student or a parent or a teacher, hopefully why I'm taking that trip in the first place, being able just to be an encouragement or an inspiration or motivation to them, that's why I'm doing it. So that's the glamorous, that's the sexy part of the job that maybe nobody sees, where you're getting into the hotel at 2 a.m. and you had flight delays and cancellations. And I had just a couple weeks ago where flight got canceled or it was a delay and was going to miss a connection and ended up having to rent a car and just drive 7 hours to get to a deal. It's just part of it. And so, yeah, there's parts of that that just suck. But, you know, for me, the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is not only am I able to make a difference, but this is also how I make my living, you know? And so in some ways it comes with the territory. I think another thing that's important to do is you really have to balance how much you do it. I do about 50, 60 events a year. I could do 100. I could do 125 or 150. And I know guys that do that. To me, that's difficult to scale. And it's very difficult to just maintain your sanity to be like a normal, healthy, whole human being. Plus, I'm married to my high school sweetheart. We've got 3 little girls. So as much as I like speaking, I enjoy being home. I would prefer to be home. And so if I'm a great speaker, if I make a difference in a bunch of other lives, but if I suck as a husband or as a father, or if I'm just a shell of a human being, forget that. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. And that was another question I wanted you to touch on. You kind of did there. It's unique from other guests on the show in that you have a family with a wife and kids and stuff like that. And obviously that changes your travel patterns. And you kind of spoke to that there. Is there a way that you schedule your travel? Because a lot of people who do business travel like you, they might be able to have some say over their schedule, right? Like they don't have to go certain days, but they do have to travel eventually. Do you kind of bunch your scheduling to travel all at once, or how do you work that out?
Again, it kind of comes and goes in waves. And so I think over time, my wife and I have learned to just as a couple to kind of ride those waves and those highs and those lows. For example, we're recording this early May, and this is the first full week I've been home since like mid-February, where I had at least one or two events every week for the past, 10 or so weeks. And it's a busy season. But at this point, I'm home all this week. Next week, I'm going on a trip. My wife's coming with me. I think I've got one or two other events, and then I'm in a lot coming up. So it's seasonal. If it was like that year round, that would be miserable. But we can ride that wave. We can tolerate that for a little bit, knowing that it works out. So when I'm on the road, I stay in contact with my girls constantly. So we FaceTime usually multiple times a day, talk to my wife on the phone several times a day. The other day, I was got to the airport, and I realized like my wife and I had just been texting back and forth all day. We've been talking a lot on the phone too. I counted up, we exchanged something like 167 text messages that day. On one day, I'm gone, So most people are like, dude, just pick up the phone. But whether it's the phone or FaceTime or text, wanting to make sure I stay in constant communication with them, they're involved in my world and I'm involved in theirs, even when the job requires me to be gone. So the other thing that I try to do is I don't miss birthdays. I make sure that I block out some of those days. And April is one of my busiest times of year and in terms of conferences that I speak at. And my oldest daughter's birthday is April 12th. So I just block that day out. So there's been numerous times where people are like, hey, we'd love for you to be a part of this. Another example, WDS this summer. I would love to be there. My daughter's birthday is July 11th. It falls over that. And so I can't be there. So just marking out some of those things like this is non-negotiable, these are priorities, this is what's important to me. So it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to try to live it. And it's not always easy because there's times where you're like, oh man, this is a great event, or I'd love to go to WDS, but I'd rather be a good father and rather make sure that I've got my priorities straight there.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And it's for anyone, whether it's business travel or just someone who works a lot, even from home and they have their own business, the hardest part is making time for the other people in your life and not work, work, work. Because once you become good at something, you really do have endless possibilities. And you really have to say, I'm going to set these priorities. These are set in stone. These are non-negotiable. And like you said, you've been able to do that with birthdays and different events. And that is a very, very hard thing for people to learn. Something that I'm still learning to this day is, how at night to say, all right, enough's enough. Like you could work all night. You're not going to get everything done that you need to get done anyway, right? So...
Well, another thing I try to do is, depending on where I'm going, I'll bring the girls along. So in a couple of weeks, I'm speaking at a deal in Orlando. I'm going to be pretty busy speaking, but they're going to spend the whole time at the pool, So even though I've still got work to do and it's not just like a vacation where dad can just lounge around for the whole trip, they're able to tag along. A few times they've been able to come to an event and I'll pull them up on stage. And, like it's funny afterwards, especially if I'm speaking at like a high school or college event. Like a lot of the students will want to have a picture taken afterwards, or they'll want an autograph or something, and which my wife just finds so silly. She's like, why are people signing his? So I agree. It's totally bizarre, but it's always fun at those type of events where my girls come with me. My youngest daughter's 3 and the other 2 are 8 and 5. And so people are wanting their picture with them, or they're wanting them to like scribble their name. And the girls are like, this is so cool, So it's cool that they get to be a part of my world. So it's not like dad has his personal life and then over here dad has his business and we keep them all separate. It's like I want them to be a part of that. And I want them to be able to experience some of those things where they're able to tag along with me. And so sometimes it's going to Orlando. Sometimes, I got booked to speak at a deal this fall that's at one of those Great Wolf Lodges with the huge indoor water parks, And I got to speak, but the girls are coming so they can play at the water park, and be a part of that. So being able to see some of those opportunities, and it doesn't always work out, it's not like if I'm speaking at 60 events, they're coming to 30 of them. But if we can find 3, 4, 5, 6 things a year that they can tag along for, if I'm going somewhere sunny or pretty or somewhere that's got a water park, they're in. But if I'm in North Dakota, I'm on my own.
Right. They're going to Orlando, but they're not going to Sioux Falls, right?
No, not as appealing.
So, and that's kind of the joy too of having your own business. A lot of people have to go certain times and things like that. They might not be able to bring their spouse or kids along, but because you've created your own company, you know, you answer to yourself. And so you make those decisions. And that's a really neat thing and kind of a unique situation that you're in for your business travel versus maybe someone who's working for a company or a corporation or something like that. But
yeah, for sure. I mean, it helps a ton to have some of that flexibility of being able, when travel opportunities come up, to be able to say no and to be in control. You know, I've got a few friends who work a corporate gig and they may travel, you know, Monday through Friday. And then if their boss says, hey, we need you to come in on Saturday for a meeting, it's not like they have a vote. You know, they may have to go in and they may have to turn around and travel the following week. So I hear those types of stories and I was like, yeah, that sucks. Cause I know at least when I'm home, you know, like right now I'm recording this from my house, my girls are upstairs. And so I'm able to, when I'm home, I can be home and be in control of that schedule and that flexibility.
Right. What are some ways that people like yourself who are either self-employed or they have a small business, they don't have these large expense accounts that we hear about? You know, we think business travel, or at least I do, major companies, oh, I'm going to take people out, I'm going to stay at the nicest hotels, everything like that. How can you keep your business travel expenses to a minimum? What are some ways you've found to cut costs? Because I assume some of the business expenses fall on you and maybe some are paid by the conferences or people who are paying you to speak, right?
And so typically the way it works, at least in my business and the way most speakers have it, is it's usually an all-inclusive fee. So we're going to pay you one flat rate. It makes it easier on the conference's budget. You cover all of your travel out of that. So what you do up to that is up to you. So really, I had someone say one time, it's not what you make, it's what you take. And so what you take home, so the smaller your expenses, the more you're taking home. Over the years, I've become a little more, not necessarily like loose with the spending or anything, but I'm a lot more, like whenever I travel, if I have the choice to fly, I'm executive platinum on American, so I'm almost always on American. So given the choice of flying American or saving $100 to fly United, I'll probably pay the extra $100 to fly American because I know I'm earning the miles. I know I'm going to get requalifying on my status. So some of those just little perks and intangible things. There's been times where I'm speaking somewhere that's just middle of nowhere. And I typically, when I'm traveling, I'm typically a Hilton Honors guy. I'm usually in Hampton Inns. And so if there's a Best Western across the street from the venue, or there's a Hampton Inn an hour away, there's a decent chance I might stay at the Hampton Inn just because I know I'm going to get a better experience. And even though it may cost $50 more, I'm okay with that. So those types of things where there's definitely a balance to figure out, is it worth that extra expense for the miles, the points, the status, any of those things? Or sometimes is it just, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, American doesn't fly hardly anywhere in North Dakota, but I speak there several times. So there's times where it's just you fly United to get there because that's the only and best direct option that you have. But it kind of depends where you're going, what you're doing. But yeah, it's that balance of minimizing the expenses, but not feeling like, well, I'm going to do a high school assembly, therefore I need to stay at a Ritz-Carlton, because that just, if it's on my dime, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I think we talk a lot about on the website too, is finding the sweet spot, right, between comfort, convenience, and cost. And whether it's business travel, travel for pleasure, there's still always those questions of, all right, I want to get a good experience. I want to maximize my experience, but everything's coming out of my pocket. And, you know, I'm not going to pay $500 for it. I can get 80% of that experience, or maybe 100% of that experience for, you know, one third the cost or something like that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, on some of those things where if I come to the end of the trip and I was like, hey, I saved $100, but I had a horrible travel experience, and as a result, I'm tired and I didn't sleep well and all of those types of things. And I ate $10 worth of tacos at Taco Bell's over 4 days to save some money. That's a horrible experience, you know? So I'm not going out to a Ruth's Chris every night to dine on steak or something. But I mean, I do plenty of Subway and plenty of just sandwiches because it's a cheaper thing. But yeah, occasionally, you splurge for a steak or you splurge for something nice. But being able to balance that, knowing again, it's coming out of my pocket at the end of the day, that I'm not trying to live on the high horse all the time, but I'm just trying to make travel comfortable and bearable.
Yeah, exactly. And you're a big, as you said, a loyalty guy. I think that's important. Most people who are listening to this probably are part of loyalty programs, but if you aren't and you are traveling, you know, they don't cost anything to join. You might as well be getting miles for flying or for staying at hotels or anything like that on top of the miles that you'll get, you know, as we talk about credit card bonuses, online shopping, all the other ways. But yeah, especially if you're a business traveler or traveling a lot, getting those points. I know you've been able to rack up a ton of American Airlines miles because of the fact that you travel so much, not all just from credit cards.
Yeah, no, I absolutely had breakfast with a buddy this morning and we were kind of talking about miles and points, and he's like, yeah, you earn a ton though through actual travel. I said, yeah, I mean, I definitely earn a fair amount from actually butt and seat travel, but I also earn a lot from the credit cards and the hacking and just the various, you know, tactics and tricks that are out there. So one thing I'd highly recommend, you know, I'm sure your audience has already done this, but just sign up for every program that's out there, because there's a lot of times where my only option is a Best Western. And so I, you know, you may do that. It may not be the first choice, but if you can earn a couple points, that may come back at some point and help you out somewhere. Another thing that we do is anytime I'm staying at a hotel, a lot of times if I'm staying at a conference hotel where it's just kind of a block room or a comped room or something, I may not get any points for it, but a lot of times I'll still get a stay credit for it. Even though it was covered by someone else, I'll just make sure that my membership number is attached to the stay. So I'm getting something out of it there. But every time I check in at a hotel, even if it's not one of my usuals, I'm pulling out my award wallet app and here's my number. Make sure this is in your system so that I'm getting something out of it.
Yeah, there's been times like that for me. Rental cars for me, I don't usually rent cars that often. You know, I'm not traveling a ton where I need to rent cars over and over again. But I find myself having different statuses with rental cars because, you know, you sign up and they give you some status and all of a sudden there's a free GPS in there. And, you know, I didn't even know. I just signed up and they're like, oh, Mr. Sherry, you're a whatever member, a gold member. Okay, cool. You know, give me whatever perks are available. So...
yeah, for me on rental car, I think that's one thing that most rental car companies don't have don't have a good loyalty program. So National's the one that I've been on for a while. They have a good Emerald Isle. They've got a bunch of cars in the lot. You just pick whatever. You just rent a midsize, reserve a midsize, just pick whatever in the lot there, and then you go. Based on the number of rentals you can earn, you can start earning free days. So we rack up, you know, 5-6 free days a year just from that I'll just save for personal vacations. You know, those little things really, really add up and start to offset some of your own personal costs later on trips.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about the personal vacations. And since I know that you do enjoy traveling for pleasure with the family and all, and a lot of people think traveling with a family, especially a family of five, can be a costly proposition. And I know a lot of people who tend to think that's just a financial impossibility. And they tell me, like, Travis, I don't travel because I have a kid or two kids or three kids or whatever. And not having any children myself, I try to give them advice on how they can, and some of the stuff works for single people or families, but you've got much more experience to that. How are you able to save on costs when traveling with a family of five?
It's definitely, it costs more because everything's five times the miles. And so, you know, in some ways I'm envious of guys who are like, you know, I'm just going to take this first class, you know, trip to Thailand or something because I've got the miles. I'm like, well, I've got the miles too, but I've also got four other people that are banking on those miles. So to take it and stretch it further, you really got to think it through. So typically, a couple of little things that we do, if the whole family's coming with us, we almost always try to fly Southwest. You get free checked bags, and so that makes a difference. Any change fees, any cancellations, you know, are all waived. So those types of things make a difference. It's always a lot easier to find availability for five people on Southwest versus some other airlines. So some airlines, you know, like I said, I'm executive platinum with American. Unless you're jumping on it pretty quick, it's tough to find five seats for most itineraries that you're looking for, domestic or international. So usually if the whole family's coming, we usually do Southwest. And usually if it's just my wife and I, we'll try to do American because it's a lot easier to find availability for two seats. So whenever everybody's coming with us, we almost always do like an Embassy Suites. I know Hilton Honors, their points get smashed a lot because of the devaluations. And if you're looking for some top tier property, then yeah, you're looking at 90 or 100,000 points. But, you know, if I can get an Embassy Suites that works fine for our family of five for, you know, 30,000 to 40,000 points a night, yeah, it works out pretty well. So we do that a lot. We do a Hyatt Place a lot where you get a little more space. Those types of things where you get, even if you don't have status, you're going to get breakfast and you're going to get internet. Those little things start to add up. But a lot of times people think, you know, to do some type of trip with family of five, it's going to be, you know, like massive amounts of miles. You're going to have to go somewhere for this long extended period of time. But we do a lot of little trips throughout the year. So 2-3 weeks ago, so we went to Chicago for two nights. And so we took Amtrak up there, going up there. We hadn't done a train trip before. My girls loved it. They're like, dude, we got to go. They don't call me dude. Dad, we got to go on this train thing a lot more because they like to be able to move around. So the idea of like being confined to a car seat for a long trip, they're like, this sucks. I hate this. They don't say this sucks either. I'm making up all these things my kids say. So we did the train thing up to Chicago. We were there for two nights and then we did a one-way flight home. using British Air miles. And so it was super, super cheap to do just for a quick little getaway. We live about 3 hours from St. Louis, so there's been a few times where we'll go up there and just get an Embassy Suites or a Hyatt Place up there, and we'll do that. You know, there's a Hyatt Place up there we can do for 5,000 points a night. That's super cheap. You know, you can do that. You can do a couple nights there for just a fraction, and you're just driving up there, up and back. So those little things that we do that help, and it's not like realistically it would take a massive amount of miles and points to do first class round trip to take the whole family to Europe. So the wife and I will do first class round trip to Europe, but to get everybody over there, it's a ton. So rather than like, let's save up for one huge trip, we do a lot of little things and bring them on little trips along the way. If it's just me and the missus, then we typically will try to do, we'll do an Andaz, we'll do a, you know, something nicer that we may not want to bring the girls to.
Yeah, I think that's a few really good points in there. One, Southwest, I'll agree with that, especially if people are able to get the companion pass, and we don't have to geek out on that too much, but the companion pass basically allows someone to travel for free with you every time you get on a Southwest plane. So I just actually had a reader email me a little while back, and her husband both got the Southwest companion pass, and they have two kids. So now all of a sudden, four people traveling for free, if they use their Southwest points, you know, the two kids are the companions for the adults. And that's obviously a godsend for people with a ton of family, because you're not paying anything for four people to get there. So that's a good thing for people to jump on if they can.
Yeah. And I would even say, I've heard the companion pass preached so much. We don't do a ton with Southwest, so I've never actually had the companion pass. So even still, it would make a huge difference. And it's been on my radar. I just haven't messed with it. But even still, I mean, I think it goes to show I'm still paying for five tickets out of pocket with miles and points. And we still do five, six trips a year without that. But it's just being strategic about where we're going, how we're going to use those miles and points, making sure we're getting a good value for them, and making sure we're getting the best bang for our buck. Another thing I'll mention real quick, just a good story, was that paying attention to mistake fares and when flight deals, those type of things pop up. So when Delta had their mistake fare right after Christmas last year, we booked six round trip tickets in first class to Honolulu for $90 each. And it was just one of those, like, you just pull the trigger and ask questions later. You know, we're talking about it later, and being able to take our family, and I brought my mom with us. She'd never flown first class, had never been to Hawaii. So she's like, this is insane, you know? So the number of miles that would be required for six people to fly first class round trip to Honolulu is crazy. You know, it's a lot of miles that you need, but being able to just pay attention to some deals that, like, rarely, but occasionally do pop up, and being able just to pull the trigger. For us, a big thing I think we do is we make travel a priority. So there's so many people, like friends of ours, that are like, you're taking another trip? You just got back from a trip. I was like, yeah, but like, this is how we choose to spend our money. This is what we do with our energies and efforts. You may spend it elsewhere, and that's cool, but here's how we prioritize travel in our own world.
Right. Yeah. Two, like you said, important points. Making a priority, I think a lot of people don't realize how little you can travel for if you are strategic, and they don't see the money they're spending on a new car versus a used car as even an option of, okay, well, we could save that 10 grand, 15 grand, whatever. You know, that's going to be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 trips, whatever, however you do it. And I think the other big point is everyone thinks that travel has to be long trips. And of course, you know, I do a lot of long trips, but it's just me and my wife, and I have the lifestyle where I can do that. But like you said, it's all these little trips, and especially for younger kids, you know, them going on the train to Chicago is probably going to be the same as them going to Thailand, right? They're going to know it's going to be something different. It's going to be a great experience. So you don't always have to have these massive, massive, incredible, exotic trips for it to be worth it, especially for your children to enjoy it, and then for you to enjoy it, you know, vicariously through them.
Yeah, and we try to make it a priority that when we're going on trips, that it's not, hey, this isn't just a vacation all the time. Like, we try to make sure we hit museums and make educational points out of the trip, so that it's not just, yeah, we just do this just for fun. You know, it's nice to get away, but also we do it because we know that there's huge, huge value in sharing those types of experiences with our kids. In fact, this year we just started homeschooling our girls, and this is the first full year. We just wrapped up the first full year, and it was great. And part of the reason we did it was to have more flexibility to take trips. So when that Hawaii thing popped up, we're able to pull the trigger on it and just be like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go. Instead of worrying like, wow, I mean, that's going to be another few days out of school, and the principal's already not happy with us for pulling them out all the time. So being able just to say, no, this is a priority. And even on that trip, just a quick random story. On one of our flights, the flight from Atlanta to Los Angeles, former President Jimmy Carter was on the plane. And so while we're still at the gate, he goes around and he shakes everybody's hand and says hi. It's like he was campaigning or something. But I've got a picture of him shaking the hand of all of my girls. And I'm just like, you don't get that in a classroom. You don't get that staying at home. And so those types of experiences, granted, I've been on hundreds of planes before. And I've never had that happen. And they go on one trip with me and that happened. But it was just an amazing experience where I remember just looking at that picture and feeling like this is why we travel. This is that moment is something that is just difficult to experience in any other way beyond just leaving your comfort zone and experiencing a different world.
Yeah, completely agree. And one of your main goals is to inspire and motivate young people, mostly high school, college age students. And you touched on this briefly, but how do you think travel can affect younger people's lives? And obviously, you're trying to do it with your girls at an even younger age than most of the people you're speaking to. And do you think that we should strive to have our young people, as Americans here, travel more, because they tend to lag behind a lot of other countries, you know, European countries, Australian countries, one country of Australia, in the travel race, right? We don't travel as much as those other cultures. Is that something you think that younger people should strive to do more, and would it benefit them?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Because it just, a lot of times we think of travel and we think of the, let's go to Europe, let's go to Australia, let's take these exotic trips. And sometimes maybe a travel for you is just driving 2 or 3 hours away to maybe a big city you've never seen before. And so a lot of times I'll speak in some of these different, like, smaller rural schools where maybe it's a high school of 100 kids in a small little town where they have a stoplight and a McDonald's and that's it. And that's all they've known. Like, they've never seen anything. Sometimes hearing the stories of those kids, like, sometimes maybe they're from those small little towns, but the conference that they're coming to is in some major city within the state. And that may have been their first taste of seeing a different city. You know, I spoke at a conference a couple weeks ago in Colorado, and there was a few people that it was a national conference, and a few people had come in from Florida, and they're like, we've never seen snow before. And you're like, that's crazy, you know? So just something simple like that. Seeing snow may not revolutionize or change your life, but just seeing this, there's this whole other world outside of the bubble and the cocoon that so many of us grew up in, that whenever you're experiencing, you're opening your eyes to, there's just a whole other world of opportunities and options available to you.
Yeah, and to this day, when people ask me what was my most transformative travel trips, and I can point to three big ones, and one of them is when I was 18 years old, I took a road trip with my best friend down to Florida, and I had been to Florida countless times before that. My grandparents lived down there, but I had never had that freedom before. I had never taken a trip on my own. You know, we got out of my driveway. Within 10 minutes, we had to use a cell phone. This is when cell phones, you know, weren't as ubiquitous as they are now. And I said, I don't even know where to go to get on 95 South. You know, we're calling up my dad and he's talking me through it. But it was this trip, and I just thought, this is what freedom feels like. I'm 18. I'm on my own for the first time. I'm traveling. And, you know, we're going to Florida. It's Florida, right? It's not exotic. It's not crazy. But to this day, 12, 13 years later, I sit there and think, that is what really got me bit with the travel bug. It's just that taste of, this is totally new. And it doesn't have to be somewhere crazy to get that feeling. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. Like you said, it can be seeing snow for the first time.
Yeah, it's just those little types of things. And it's a huge point of pride for me that, you know, my girls have been on more planes and have been to more states and been to more countries than most people will ever experience in a lifetime, you know, just because, again, we've made that a priority. And I want, even the other day, I was talking with my oldest daughter, who's 8, and we're just talking about, like, what was your favorite place we've been to? What was your favorite trip we've taken? And we're just kind of, you know, recounting some of these. Oh, you remember when we went to Costa Rica and we did this? You remember when we went to Dominican Republic and we did this? You remember when we took the train here? And you remember when we did the subway there? And just some of those types of things, to them, they're like, that was so cool, being able just to experience a different culture, to be able to, when we went to a Dominican Republic several months ago, and there's not a lot of people that speak English, you know, where we happen to be. And so teaching my girls, like, basic little Spanish, you know. And so we had we'd rented a little golf cart, and we're driving around this community in this neighborhood where we stayed. And everywhere we're going, the girls are like, hola, hola, hola. And, you know, so just being able to help the girls experience, like, there's other nationalities and other countries and other worlds where people speak a different language than you and I speak. And people look different. And here's how that ties back into us as humans and being a part of something that's bigger than ourselves. And so just some of those, like, parenting and, like, life lessons of being able to, one thing, talk about, or one thing to look at in a textbook, something totally different to share those types of moments and experiences with your own kids.
Yeah. And I think doing that traveling with your family is much different, even to this day, being 31. When my parents came over to visit me in Japan, it was such a cool experience because I was showing them my life there. And it was different than when my friends came, because yeah, it's different in good and bad ways, but mostly it's you have this pride as either a parent or as a child who's then showing your parents something different of, I am opening their eyes to something that they probably would not experience if it wasn't for me. And that's just a cool feeling.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to see my brother next week, and he lives in New York City. And we grew up in Springfield, Missouri. There's probably 250,000 people here. Not big, not small, but somewhere in the middle there. So when I go see him and hang out with him for a few days, it's just a different way of life, you know, and even within our country, even, you know, several hours away, but there's just this whole nother way of life, even within our world. And so just being able to see those types of places and see those types of environments that are just different than what I'm used to, but it's cool to see how other people live life.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And you've traveled to quite a few places. I think at last count, maybe 42 states. You can correct me if that's more now.
I'm at 48.
Okay.
The only two been to are Maine and South Carolina. So I don't know how I've missed South Carolina. Maine, I just haven't made it up there because that's, you know, it's hiding in its corner. But South Carolina is kind of out there, and I haven't made it there for some reason.
So what have been some of your favorite places or experiences that you've had when traveling, whether it be business traveling or personal traveling or anything?
You know, one of the cool things about travel is you see so many different types of places. So I love going to the big cities. I love the Chicagos, the New Yorks, the San Franciscos, the Seattles, those type of places. But there's also, I really, really like going to some of those like small little rural areas, you know, where I've spent a lot of time on road trips driving to different schools. I was in Texas last week in some very rural areas, but there's some places that are just beautiful. I've spent a lot of time in North Dakota driving from rural school to speak at, and it's beautiful in several spots, you know? So much of what we look at of like, what's the areas that are the big, beachy, sexy areas where you want to go, but then there's also so much just rural spots or just off the grid type locations that are just stunningly gorgeous and have just some cool, amazing people there that you just wouldn't think of, that you wouldn't think to visit. We did an RV trip a couple years ago down to the beach in Florida, and we went to this small little RV park on the beach, and there's one grocery store and one restaurant, and there's just nothing there. There's nothing anywhere except just the beach and just kind of this undeveloped little spot on the shore there. And it was so, so cool, not because there was this big high rise and there was just everything around. It was just, you're just kind of there, you know, in this little semi-undiscovered, untouched pocket of the world, and just being able to be there. So there's pros and cons to both of them, and it's cool to experience both of them.
Yeah, and if anyone is interested, a book that I read a long time ago, and I usually read every 2 or 3 years now, is a book called Blue Highways, and I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's by William Leistheat Moon, and I think it's in the 80s, and he takes a road trip on what then on the maps were the Blue Highways, which are the back roads. Now I think the maps, the Blue Highways are the main roads, but regardless, he just writes about his experience of driving around in a van, taking all back roads, no highways. Yeah, just stuff like you talked about. You find these little pockets of places, and you just think, this is not a tourist destination, but to me, this speaks volumes because I'm seeing real life here. So,
yeah, absolutely. There's so many of those pockets around, and they're the ones that we never read about, or then the ones that we never find out about. And so, yeah, being able to find some of those off the grid type places is really, it's just really interesting. It's very fascinating just to see those other ways of life.
Yeah. And one thing that I've been asking everyone who's come on in the last couple of shows is, everyone tends to think that people who travel a lot have it together and things rarely go wrong because we're seasoned travelers. But in fact, I've found it to be quite the opposite in my case. Are there any hilarious mishaps you've had while traveling that kind of stick out in your mind as, well, I can't believe I made this mistake, but it's a funny story in the end?
I can think of some family ones where I remember once we were flying, I don't remember where we were going from or to, but like missed a connection and then got on a different flight and our seats were all kind of separated. And one of my girls at the time, I don't know, she's pretty young. And so long flight, I'm holding her and she falls asleep. I mean, I quickly feel she's peeing all over both of us. And at that point, it was like a choppy flight, bumpy flight. And so I even buzzed the flight attendant. I was like, can I take her to the bathroom? I'm like, no, you can't. You get us. I was like, she's peeing all over both of us right now, please. She's like, I'm sorry. And she wasn't cool about it at all. So like, it's, you know, we land, I'm soaked and carrying her off the plane and finding a bathroom. And just one of those things like, it sucks that this is a horrible thing, but it happens. And those are part of the stories that we look at it like in the moment, you're just like, oh my gosh, what have we got ourselves into? But it's fun to look back on. It's fun to think about those things, like the good, bad, ugly of those things. When we were coming back from Dominican Republic, the day we were coming back, one of my girls got real sick and we are at the airport, like going through security and she's puking like everywhere. And so everyone's looking at us, the airport security, they're like, are you sure she's okay to fly? I'm like, yeah, she's fine. Don't worry. Because we're like, man, I was calling the airline, like, if we don't get out of the country, like, we're here for several days and we got to get back. We got to make this flight. And it's one of those things where in the moment you're like, oh man, it would be so much nicer to just be sitting on my couch right now. But that's part of the adventure of it. And that's part of the story. And that's part of the excitement and the fun where in the moment you just want to burst into tears. But looking back, you're like, that was cool. We made it. We got out of the country. We got back to America. It was all right.
Yeah, I think those type of stories make me want to travel just as much as when people say, I sat on this awesome beach. It was beautiful. I kayaked around, just because you don't know what's going to happen. And that is the joy of traveling. It might be hard then, but later on you think, that wouldn't have happened if I was sitting at home. I wouldn't have had that story. I wouldn't have grown in a certain way, or I just wouldn't have laughed, you know, at this story now. So yeah, really cool.
And we've had, you know, my wife and I, we've had plenty of those trips where with the kids where you come back and you're like in the trip, the girls are acting horrible or like everything's just falling apart and it's just not going at all according to plan, or wife and I are at each other's throats. And in the moment you're like, ah, this sucks. Let's just go home. Let's get out of here. But it seems like as soon as you get home, you're like, I don't know. Let's just forget about it. Let's just do that again. When can we book the next one? And it's just all of that washes away so that you can just figure out, let's go have that experience again. And maybe it'll be great. Maybe it'll be horrible. We've had some great trips and we've had some horrible trips where like that didn't work at all. I don't know what happened there, but let's reevaluate and figure out what to not do next time. But that's part of the fun of the journey.
Yeah. Travel magnifies life. The highs are highs, the lows are lows, but in every way, it's magnifying it. It's making you feel more alive. And I know that's what I love about it. So real quick, I know you have something coming up in the pipeline that we should be looking out for. So can you tell people your newest project? Because it's really cool.
Yeah, we've got a new podcast launching called How Did You Get Into That? And basically, as a speaker, it's one of the questions I get all the time from people is, hey, how did you get into that? And you even asked that question at the beginning of this. And it's one of those things that I think people ask, not necessarily because they're interested in becoming a speaker, but I think it's just it's a fascinating career. I know that myself and a lot of people ask that question of others when you come across someone who's doing something. You know, you're an example of that, of going, okay, you travel, you write about it, and you teach other people. How do you get into that? You know, and I may not want to get into it, but I'm just intrigued on how you're doing it. So how did you get into that is, it's a podcast where we're interviewing people that are just doing interesting and unique and inspiring work, just to ask them, A, how do you get into that? If I wanted to become a travel blogger or teach other people how to do this, how would I do that? And B, just to provide that inspiration to other people of, if you and I can get paid to travel and to speak and to write and to do all these cool activities and things that we get to do, then someone that may be listening to this driving down the road or sitting in cubicle land right now is going, surely I can figure out how to escape this and figure out what I'm into. So we're interviewing bloggers, artists, photographers, videographers. Tomorrow I'm talking to a girl who's a cheesemonger in New York City, which I'm like, what? So she's like one of the top curators of cheese for fine dining restaurants in New York City. I was like, I know squat about cheese and have zero desire to learn about it, but that's just fascinating. You make a living with cheese. How does someone get into that? And so hopefully the show will be just an encouragement and inspiration for people trying to figure out not only what they want to do, but how to get into some of those types of professions and paths.
Yeah, and I have a very inquisitive nature. I know I always, any job someone tells me about, I'm always interested how they got into it. And so I am super fascinated and excited for the podcast. When does it launch?
May 27th is when we go live. We've got a bunch of interviews stacked up with some just really, really cool people. Several people that maybe your audience has heard of and is familiar with, but maybe just hasn't heard their backstory. And there's been several people I've already talked to, and we get off the interview and they're like, man, that was just, you have some interesting questions. We really dove deep there and you forced me to think about some of my own journey that I wasn't really sure how I got to this point. I think some really cool people that you'll be interested and inspired by, and some people that you'd have no idea who they are, but what they do and the work that they're into is super, super cool. So you're going to be on the show. I know we're working on scheduling that and ironing that out. So make sure the EPOP family looks out for that coming soon.
Yeah, they definitely will. So if you're listening to this before the show, May 27th, they're launching. Probably you'll be listening to this after. So definitely go over, check out the podcast. I'm a huge fan of podcasts, always looking for new ones to come out. So I'm super excited about that, Grant. And thanks so much for coming on the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Show. Thanks for the wonderful work you do with kids all over the country. Before I let you go, can you remind people how they can come connect with you?
Yeah, everything's going to be at grantbaldwin.com, grantbaldwin.com. Info about the speaking, what we do on the motivational speaking side of that is all there, a list of where places I'm going to be. If I'm ever going to be in your area, I'd love to meet up with you. Also on Twitter, you can find us at Grant Baldwin. All the podcast stuff is going to be on that main site as well at Grant Baldwin. So email me, hit me up, anything I can do to help and serve you, I'm happy to do.
Yeah, Grant, thanks again for coming on. I'm looking forward to the podcast. I'm looking forward to seeing Missouri from a local's perspective when I finally get out that way.
Dude, come see me anytime. I'll introduce you to the homeland.
Thanks, Grant. If you've made it through to the end of this podcast, you know that Grant is a really fun-loving, easy to talk to, and easy to listen to type guy, which is why I think you love his podcast as well. He just launched his How Did You Get Into That podcast, which delves into how people were able to get into their current professions. And luckily, he launched his podcast with over 20 interviews already recorded and released, so you have tons of episodes to pick from. You can check that out by going to grantbaldwin.com. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to do Grant a huge favor and rate it on iTunes. Also, don't forget, guys, that the Paradise Pack Sale is now live, but for only 72 hours. Unfortunately, because we're offering the products at an 80% discount, I can't sell the Paradise Pack to anyone, not even my own mom, after it expires at midnight on June 5th. So if you want to get it, head on over to theparadisepack.com now. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast. And until next time, happy free travels.